Lord, is it now? Do you want us to rain down fire so we can just incinerate this city? Those were the words of James and John, actually recorded in Luke 9, when they were really ticked at a Samaritan village because a Samaritan village wouldn't let them and Jesus come and eat with them and stay with them overnight. And they said, do you want to just to destroy them all right now? Now, Jesus rebuked him, obviously, but what's interesting about it is it shows you the undercurrent of hostility that was there between Jew and Samaritan of the day. And this wasn't anything new. This started back in 722 BC when the nation of Israel was rebelling against God. They got deported off for some 70 years in exile, and they took the best of the people, the brightest, the leaders, the priests. They brought them all away. They exiled them. But those that remained then stayed, and they intermarried with the Canaanites. And they started a new religion, if you will. They took a little bit of the Canaanite religion, and they took a little bit of the Jewish religion, and they combined these things to a syncretic religion called the Samaritans. And the Samaritans then lived in that way, but then when the conquering was over and the exiles came back to Jerusalem, then what happened was the Jews that came back looked at these Samaritans and said, "You guys are political outcasts, you are half-breeds, you are religiously way off course." And so they hated them. I mean, they treated them like the scum of the earth. Now, you use that and you take that and you let that stew for hundreds of years. And then you have the context of when we come to John chapter 4. Now, we are in this encounters with Jesus as we're looking at different times when Jesus has been with different people. And what we learn as we go through with it, this morning what we want to do is we want to look into one that is very familiar to a lot of people, and that is the woman at the well, who happened to be Samaritan. We'll pick it up in verse 3 of John chapter 4, just to give a little context before we jump in. He, being Jesus, left Judea and departed again for Galilee, and he had to pass through Samaria. So he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. So Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well, and it was about the sixth hour. Now, whatever you use for your GPS, whether you use Waze or you use Google Maps or whatever, when you dial it into where you want to go and you push directions, it'll give you different routes, right? It'll give you the shortest route. It'll give you the fastest route. You can change the route. You can do whatever. But if you wanted to go from the Judea in the south to Galilee in the north, the shortest direction it would take you would be right through Samaria. But this is what most Jews didn't want to take this, so they would take a longer route. They would recalculate, and they would go clear to the east, and they would go around the Dead Sea, and they would come up then and come a completely different way. For them, it was worth it to go a longer route just so that they didn't have to go through Samaria. For the reasons that we said, the tensions were high, they didn't like them, they didn't want to have to associate with them, didn't want to have to eat their food, so they would go around the north, the other way, the eastern way. And Jesus says, it says in a passage that he had to go. Now, he had different options, but he wanted to go through Samaria because he had a divine appointment. The woman didn't know it, the disciples didn't know it, but Jesus knew it. He knew that he wanted to meet this woman, and he was going to have a conversation with her. Now, it's interesting. Jesus sent the disciples on. Go get some food. Go ahead. Go get some food. And you're thinking, well, why? They didn't all have to go. You know, you had a lunch order, and you could send one person to go get the lunch and bring it back. And he's like, they all went. Why? Jesus knew that this woman was going to be coming alone. He knew that if he had the disciples there and they were in on this conversation, the whole thing would change its trajectory. He knew he had to get her alone because when she was alone, she would be able to open up in ways that she wouldn't if she had these men here who already had a bias against her because she was a woman, one, and because she was Samaritan. And so he just said, "You guys, go get some lunch. Some things are going to happen while you're gone." And so then he comes, and then it comes to the part where Jesus has this meeting with this woman. And a woman, pick it up in verse 7. So here's what I want to do this morning. I always like to tell you where I'm headed. I'm going to do a little bit different this morning. I don't have just 3 points. Okay? So, praise the Lord, maybe. I got 7. No, I'm just joking. What I want to do is I want to just read through the passage because this is a dialogue that is going back and forth. And so I want to just kind of comment on the dialogue and what's happening and how Jesus just takes this thing and moves it in a direction that you think, what in the world are you doing? But he masterfully enters into this woman's world so that he can save her. Verse 7, a woman from Samaria came to draw water. This is the divine appointment. And Jesus said to her, give me a drink. In other words, I'm thirsty. For his disciples had gone away to the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, how is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For the Jews had no dealings with the Samaritans, as we said. So not only now is he crossing political, racial, and ethnic barriers, now you throw into the mix that you have a rabbi who is speaking to a woman, a Samaritan woman. Now, unfortunately, the women in that day were oppressed. They had a terribly low status in the culture. And so the normal course of things is that a rabbi, particularly a rabbi, wouldn't be speaking to a woman, necessarily a Samaritan woman. They would never have that conversation, which just shows you that Jesus has no respecter of persons. He will enter in and he will begin to reach a person regardless of their political, ethnic, religious, or gender. He is reaching in and going, my grace is available to all. And it will reach to all. In the previous text, it tells us that the woman comes at the sixth hour. There's a couple things here. Number one, this is the sixth hour is recorded to be at noon. So she's coming at noon on a very hot day. This is a hot climate. And so she's coming at noon. This is not the time you would come to drink, to get water. It makes it even harder. You would go in the early morning or you would go at night. The second thing is she comes alone. That's another thing that wouldn't happen. The women would usually come in groups and they would do this together. It was kind of something that they could do together and socialize as they went on. So this woman is not only, she's an outcast. She's a social outcast, even amongst the Samaritans. They think less of her. She probably gets ridiculed. She probably gets all of this flack from her life that we'll learn more about. But is she just probably just so tired? It's just easier to go alone and to go at noon than to do it when you just get ridiculed and you just get put down at every step of the way while you're doing it. Now, Jesus always does this, though, because you see him and Jesus would go to, he would break barriers. I mean, he went to Zacchaeus' house and people are like, why would you go eat with sinners and tax collectors? And who does he appear to first after he raises from the dead? Mary Magdalene. Not necessarily a woman of high repute, but someone who couldn't even go to court and give testimony. But he says, I'm going to appear to you first. And so Jesus is constantly breaking through these barriers. And Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is, and what he's saying to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. The woman said to him, sir, if you have nothing to draw water with and the well is deep, where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us this well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock. So what Jesus is doing here is Jesus is building a bridge to her, showing her that she has a thirst. There is something that is far greater than in the spiritual realm than just your physical thirst. You know, and it's interesting in John, there are two stories that start out in John. One is an insider and one is an outsider. In John 3, you have an insider, Nicodemus, a Pharisee. And then in John 4, and he's confused. And then you have in John 4, you have an outsider, this woman from Samaria. She's confused as well. And it's interesting that both of them are far from God. The insider and the outsider, they're just on different spectrums. Neither of them really understand. And so when Jesus says to Nicodemus, you must be born again, he's like, how in the world do you go back into your mother's womb? He's like, you're not even close to understanding what I'm talking about. Until Jesus went to the Samaritan woman and he says, hey, I give you water that you will never thirst again. And what is her response? You don't have a bucket. How are you going to get this living water? You don't even have that. And so for a Samaritan, they revered Jacob. For a Jew, they revered Abraham. And Jesus is saying, someone greater than both of them is here. And it is me. They both pointed to me. We go on. Jesus said to her, everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. And the woman said to him, sir, give me this water so that I don't have to be thirsty or have to come here to draw water again. And I think what Jesus is doing, Jesus here is tapping into something. He's saying, there is just as thirsty as you are, there is a greater thirst that you have. And we're going to unveil that here in a moment. But I am the only one that can truly quench the thirst that you have. You know, and he's really kind of anchoring into something that I think they knew far better that from us. And that is, what does it mean to be thirsty? Have you ever been really thirsty? I mean, where you've just said, man, I got to get a drink of water. I just got to get some water. Well, for us, water is pretty available. I mean, we don't go very long unless you've gone to the Middle East. You know, this is a pretty arid climate, hot, dry. Closest I've ever come is when we moved to California and we're going across from Arizona into Southern California in the Sahara Desert. And I said, you know, as we drove across the country, it was interesting how things change. You know, what you saw along the road in Kentucky where we moved from was kind of more possums. And then as you got to Texas, it was armadillos. And then when you got into Southern California, roadkill was U-Haul trucks. And you just saw these fake U-Haul trucks, and you just saw these, just this air, and you would step out, and it would be like 120 in this dry climate, no water around, you know, and that was the closest thing that I could come. They knew what it was to be thirsty. And I started to read, how do you die of thirst? And it started talking about how your tongue swells, your throat gets really raw. You know, your internal organs start to shut down. And there's just this description. Go, okay. I got it. And he says, as much as you are thirsty, there is a greater thirst that you have. And she says, give me some of that. Give me some of that. And what's interesting here is she uses the word, so that I don't have to come here. This word enthrade in the Greek, two times it's used. She uses it, and Jesus says, in a minute, he's going to say, call your husband to come here. And you wonder if Jesus doesn't see inside of her and go, you are incredibly thirsty. You're showing that you don't want to come here because this is a place really of embarrassment. This is a place that just brings up ridicule and loneliness. You're coming here alone at noon to get water. Also that you can just spare yourself of all the ridicule you get from the people. And you're an outcast and you're longing for something. And when she says, give me that, she's just like, do whatever you can to spare me from having to continue to deal with this day after day, because day after day I'm just being reminded that I'm an outcast, that no one else wants to be with me, even amongst Samaritans. You know, and I think at this moment, Jesus has her. I'm like, if you have a conversation that you're having with somebody and you're leading them and he's talking, man, you're thirsty, you have a greater thirst. She's kind of waking up to this thing. And I'm like, man, Jesus, now is the time to seal the deal. Now's the time to just really reveal who you are to her and show her what's going on. And what does he say? Go call your husband and come here. And the woman answered to him, I don't have a husband. And Jesus said to her, you're right. He didn't saying I have no husband. For you've had five of them. And the one you have now is not even your husband. What you've said is true. And I think, Jesus,
Where are you going? Why are you going there? And it's just so interesting because I'm like, you had a moment when you could have just quenched her thirst and shown her. She said, give me this living water. And you said, go get your husband? Well, what Jesus is doing here really is masterful. Is he's going, okay, you say that you're thirsty? Well, let's tap in to look first where you've been trying to quench your thirst. Go get your husband. See, what Jesus is doing is Jesus is creating her understanding of her thirst and how she's been looking for this thirst in all these different places so that she can truly come to this on her own and know. He knows she's thirsty. She's been drinking deeply from the fountain of male relationships, of approval, of sex, and nothing is satisfying. I mean, I think this is what's so amazing about Mandy's testimony this morning is she was thirsty and she says, I was trying to quench that with so many different things in my 20s and 30s. And it wasn't until I realized the gospel and that it's Jesus is really the only one that can quench that thirst. And so the question this morning really is, what do you thirst for? What are you hoping for? What are you really putting everything in your life into? Is it relationships? If I just get this relationship, is it career success? Man, if I just reach this pinnacle, is it money? If I just have a little bit more, is it a degree? If I just get this degree, then I'll be set. Or is it, maybe if I just have children, then I'll be satisfied and I'll be content and my life will be full. Whatever it is that you're saying that when I have this, then I will have significance. And I will be full. I will be secure. The problem is there is nothing outside of us that can truly fill the void inside of us. Whatever we're looking for can only be satisfied on the inside, and anything else will enslave you. And we all know it. Because there's not a person in this room, myself included, who have tried to seek other things to fill the void that only Jesus can. And I've tried not just once, I've tried multiple times. Well, if I just, And so I go, Jesus, I want enough of you to make me feel good, to get me happy, but there's got to be something more, and there's got to be something that I can really go after, and when I get it, it's going to fill me, and it's going to fill all this void that I feel. I came across this commencement address by a guy named David Foster Wallace, who was giving a commencement address at Kenyon College, which is in Ohio. And he's a novelist. He's not even a believer. But he's spot on. Look at what he says. Well, you're not going to look. I don't have it on the screen. Hear what he says. Okay? He says, everybody worships, which is interesting coming from him. The only choice we get is to what to worship. And the compelling reason for maybe choosing some sort of God to worship is that pretty much anything else you worship will eat you alive. Now notice, he's saying this to college graduates. If you worship money and things, if they are what you tap into real life meaning, then you will never have enough, never feel you have enough. It's the truth. You worship your own body and beauty and sexual allure, and you will always feel ugly. And when time and age start showing and you will die a million deaths before your loved ones finally plant you. I think that means bury you. Worship power and you will end up feeling weak and afraid. And you will need even more power over other things to numb you to your own fear. Worship your intellect, being seen as smart, and you'll end up feeling stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out. Look, he says, the insidious thing about these forms of worship is not that they are evil or sinful. It is that they are unconscious. They're our natural default. And we will begin to go to them and seek them without even knowing it. They're our default settings. He's not even a believer, and he gets it. And so with this woman, Jesus knows her thirst, and he shows her that he knows her thirst, and that he is the only one that can truly set her free. You know, one of my favorite quotes of all time, it's got to be in my top three, comes from the late Tim Keller, a great loss that the Christian faith had when he passed this past year. But this is one of my favorite quotes. And he said, because it relates so much to this, he says, to be loved and not known is superficial. And that is what the world does, right? The world loves you superficially. It doesn't know you. It doesn't know your insides. It doesn't know things, but it says, well, I love you. But then he goes on, to be known and not loved, that's our greatest fear. That's the woman at the well. She was being exposed, fully known. And she goes, am I going to be loved? Up to this point, she hadn't been. Up to this point, anybody who fully knew her viewed her as an outcast, which is why she's coming to the well by herself. But the last part of the quote, I think, is the best. But to be fully known and fully loved, well, that's a lot like being loved like Jesus. Fully known. Fully loved. And I think at this moment, she's feeling this internal tension. For the first time in my life, I am exposed, fully known. I'm meeting a man who knows everything about me. But strangely, I don't feel, you know, like I should run from him. I feel like I should run to him. For the first time, I'm totally exposed, totally vulnerable, and I feel this warmth that this man knows me, but he loves me. But it's interesting, even in our flesh, even though she knows it at this moment, she still tries to deflect it, which is our natural response. Anybody, we get exposed, we get, you know, someone that comes close enough to us, and we go, ooh, man, if they really knew that, whew, this could go down the wrong way. And fear rises up in us. And then what we want to do is we want to deflect it, right? And sometimes we'll deflect it with humor. Sometimes we'll deflect it with changing the conversation. We'll do anything we can to not sit in that exposure because we don't know whether we're going to be accepted or not. And the woman said to him, sir, after she's feeling this, sir, I perceive that you're a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship. And Jesus said to her, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither this mountain nor in Jerusalem you will worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. And the woman said to him, I know that the Messiah is coming, he who is called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things. And Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he. You know, I've had conversations in my time of talking about faith to other people, and I've had moments where I really feel like this, I could just sense the Spirit moving and changing them, and their eyes are opening to the gospel. And all of a sudden they'll say, but what about those who have never heard? And I'm like, you've never had a global concern for those who have never heard in your life. Why all of a sudden now do you have this global concern? What is it? It's when someone is starting to get close enough and you're starting to feel this, boy, there is a great truth here, but my flesh doesn't want it, so I'm going to deflect it. What about the natives in Nepal? I'm like, do you even know where Nepal is? And you can see right away, we begin to deflect it. Anytime something gets too close, we'll want to deflect it. And that's what she is doing. And Jesus doesn't say to her, hey, the Samaritan temple is better or the Jewish temple is better. He says the hour is coming. Now that is said over and over and over in scriptures. And what does that refer to? It refers to his death. He says, the hour is coming. My death is coming. And then guess what? I am the temple, and it will raise in 3 days. And now the temple will be inside you, the true temple available to Jew, to Samaritan, to Gentile. It's interesting. In this passage, it never really says if Jesus got a drink. She certainly did. You know, what I think is funny is that the disciples, you know, Jesus sent them off because he knew they couldn't be involved. This wasn't going to be a teaching moment for them. He knew it would be too distracting. So then they come back and they're like, whoa, he's talking to a woman. Hey, Jesus, you want a sandwich? He's like, you have no idea what just happened. Meanwhile, this woman runs off. She goes back. And notice what she says. She starts telling the whole town, I met this man who knows everything about me. Kind of like you all do. But she's not ashamed of it. The gospel has come in and wiped her shame completely. So now she goes back and she goes, you got to meet this man. They all come rushing out. And the disciples are still, what are we going to eat? You know, what's going to be next? Let's take it home. Worship team, you can come up. You know, I think there's something really interesting here. And don't miss this, because there is a foreshadowing here. Notice at the beginning of this, Jesus, the first words out of his mouth when he sees her is, I want a drink. I'm thirsty. Now, let me ask you this. When's the next time you hear Jesus say, I'm thirsty? On the cross. With this woman, he said, I'm thirsty. He connected to her life, and she changed. She became a believer. On the cross, Jesus says, I'm thirsty. He gave up his life so that you and I could forsake the things that we are looking to satisfy our thirst and come to him. They are like bookends. And so this John passage with this woman just portrays that Jesus did that for us. And here's the deal. The question is, how about you? What are you seeking to quench your thirst? You can seek it in religion. You can be an insider and be just as far away from God as an outsider. You can be seeking to quench your thirst through religious favor, through religious adherence to doing certain things, all the while thinking that there's something I can do that's going to make God love me anymore. And maybe there's some things that you're pursuing and you're like, well, I got a little bit of Jesus, but what I'm really pursuing is this success or these relationships or whatever it would be. You know, and I know Tyler did this again last week, and I think this week it just screams for this. And so I'm going to give you a chance this morning. And I want to show you a prayer. I'm going to have this prayer on the screen. I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to give you a chance to pray this with as a confession of your heart. Lord, I confess that I've been seeking to quench my soul thirst with other things, and it has left me empty. I realize the only thing that can satisfy my longing is you. I accept your death on the cross for my sins, and I ask that you take over and fill me with your living water. So I'm going to have you bow your head, everyone. And if you've been chasing things and you have never made a commitment to surrender your life to Jesus, to be the one who can truly quench your thirst, then I want you just in your own heart to pray this with me. Lord, I confess that I've been seeking to quench my soul thirst with other things, and it has left me empty. I realize the only thing that can satisfy my longing is you. I accept your death on the cross for my sins. And I ask you to take over and fill me with your living water. In Jesus' name, amen. Look, if that is something that you've done, and it is your first time, the important thing is, first of all, congratulations, welcome to the family. But the second thing is you need to tell someone, whether it's me or someone else, you need to tell someone so that now you can grow. Because no, it's not just about making a decision. Because you'll drift. It's about making a decision and then enhancing that decision by growth and learning more about how you can pursue Jesus and how he can set you free in greater ways. And look, there's all of us. There are things in our life that Jesus wants to set us free from, things that we still hang on to, that he graciously will come and he'll just periodically go, we're going to take this now and we're going to set you free from this because this has been binding you for some time. And he graciously does that. So please make sure you tell someone. Let's stand and worship with our last. You know, the prophet Jeremiah in Jeremiah 2:13 speaks of this living water, and it says, records the Lord when he says, my people have committed two sins. One, they have forsaken me. And second, they have dug cisterns for themselves, which cannot hold water. And they have forsaken the living water. You know, what we're really seeking for, what we're really longing for in all of our pursuits, and what the world pushes at us on a daily basis is find it here, find it here, find it here, find it here. And Jesus is the only thing that's going to truly be in deep contentment is me in you. That's the only thing. So your search can stop today. Well, actually, your search can begin to go to the one who truly is the living water. We have the Lord's table. We would ask you to come and partake of that. Do so. Take some time to really go before the Lord and ask, is there anything that I'm searching other than you? And otherwise, please come talk. We'd love to pray with you. You know what to do? Go love first. We love because he first loved us. Have a great week.